Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hello there, friends. As you wait for the Bound for Glory 2006 episode of You Got to Be Kidding Me, as I overcome a cold and Liam overcomes his winter work rush, we figured we'd drop the first episode of our Pro Wrestling Guerrilla Patreon show, where we reviewed every PWG show from 2012, starting in this episode with Kurt Russell Reunion 3, featuring a whole bunch of Dragon Gate stars, so that was fun. We will be back at some point in January with the Bound for Glory 2006 episode of You Got to Be Kidding Me. And if you would like to listen to the entire series of this PWG review show, you can head to patreon.com/kiddingme and listen to all of the episodes of Guerrilla Radio so far, covering every PWG show from 2012. This episode originally, by the way, was published January 2023, in case there's any dated references. Hope you enjoy it, and Happy New Year.
Welcome everybody to the first episode of our brand new Patreon show, Guerrilla Radio. I am Garrett Kidney Taylor, and I'm joined by Liam Jones Taylor. Liam, how you doing?
We're the Fighting Taylor boys.
Yeah, we're the distant cousins of Brian Cage Taylor and Ryan Taylor.
And Chuck Taylor.
He's not on this show, he doesn't count.
He is the leader of the Fighting Taylor boys.
Well, he wasn't on this show, and therefore I have object permanence issues, and he's not real.
Literally, one of the first things I was going to ask you was, did you know about the Fighting Taylor boys gimmick?
I knew he was Brian Cage Taylor and teamed with Ryan Taylor. I did not know about the gimmick.
There's some great, like, I miss when PWG would do promo segments, and there's some really fun ones where, like, Brian Cage Taylor and Ryan Taylor are hanging out, then Chuck Taylor comes in, and he's as if he was pantomiming that he's been talking to, like, their uncle, the patriarch of the Taylor family, and complaining about their losses and stuff. It's very good stuff. We'll get into the PWG stuff immediately. Part of like my early fandom of PWG was Chuck Taylor stuff.
Yeah, if this was on the two shows you told me to watch beforehand, I was going to, but then I watched Legend of Vox Machina instead, and I thought you'd at least approve of that decision.
Well, at least you're sacrificing a thing I love for a thing I love.
Yeah.
Go back and watch. Is it Fear or Steen Wolf? That's the better one. It might be Fear. No, I think it's Steen Wolf. Watch them both though, because like that two run of PWG shows is like among the best two like runs in PWG history, and they're easy watches. So like you don't have to like completely focus on them, but like just chuck them on in the background. They're worth it.
I am the PWG casual fan parachuting in here in 2012.
All right, so yeah, I guess let's talk about that a little bit. Like, how much PWG have you watched?
I have a very bad memory for non-TNA wrestling.
Yeah, you used up all your brain power for one specific company.
It is legitimately that, where it's like, I use all of what's in my head to remember things about fucking Crimson.
Yeah.
And then I have no brain power left. Because, like, I didn't watch full shows, I would have watched recommended matches a decent amount during this era, particularly like Tozawa stuff. And I was thinking the same about, like, big Ring of Honor matches where people are, like, you know, when they're sharing their favorite Briscoes matches. And I was like, I would have watched a good amount of Ring of Honor, full Ring of Honor shows from, like, 2007 to 2012-ish in particular. Mm. I remember absolutely none of it. None of it has stayed in my brain. So I don't know. I don't remember what I watched.
Okay, so remember when we were talking about New Japan and I was going, like, waxing poetically about my love of the company and how it, like, saved pro wrestling for me?
Mm-hmm.
This was the other half of that.
Mm.
PWG was really the first company outside of WWE that I ever started watching. I don't even remember what made me watch the first time. I remember the show was PWG as the Worm Turns, I believe, in 2010. And it was just something about the vibe. It was something about, like, the commentary. Guys like, you know, I'm a little fan of this guy. You may have heard him. He's called Kenny Omega.
No.
Oh, well, again, he was on one of these
permanence
shows.
Issues. He's not on this show.
Yeah. He was on some of these shows at the time. And I was like, who's this guy? Who are these, the Young Bucks? Who is this El Generico, this Chuck Taylor, this Chris Hero, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that was the thing that hooked me. And then I started buying, like, when did I start buying DVDs? Maybe the 2013 stuff. I think DDT4 2013 was the first DVD I bought. Mm. And then I bought, like, every show for the next 2 years. And I cannot express to you how much PWG I watched in between, like, 2010 and 2015. It was, like, the only thing that I would put on in the background for things. Like, my nights would consist of playing EWR and putting on PWG and shoot interviews. I was a very popular kid.
Well, we're all wrestling fans. None of us were popular kids. Where do you think I watched most of TNA? Like, when I was rewatching, because obviously I didn't start watching TNA regularly until, like, the end of 2006. So it's like, all the stuff I didn't see, it was literally the same thing. It might have been Football Manager occasionally for me, as well as EWR and TEW. But I'd throw on Football Manager, and I'd manage my Sheffield United Football Club while playing, while watching a bunch of old wrestling. Same with, like, whenever, that's the same way I watch a lot of old WCW as well. It's just like, I'm gonna watch all of 2000 Nitro. Why? Don't ask me. But I was like, I'm gonna watch all of 2000 Nitro and have it on in the background while I play simulation management games.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was watching PWG on one half of my laptop screen with EWR on the other half, and having, like, everything from 2007 onwards downloaded, and just going through it and then rewatching it again immediately after finishing, like, a year. Because, like, I don't have a massive knowledge on the early years up until, like, 2007, 2008, but everything from 2008 to, like, 2015, I have watched 1,000 times over.
You can listen to our pals at Journey to Gorilla Island and learn about all the early day stuff, Liam.
There you go. It's a perfect hybrid. But, yeah, that was just, that's what my days were. This company was the company that I dug deep into. I was on the PWG forums pining for Ryan Taylor to make his return. Yeah.
Were you one of the guys who's like, all of the West Coast guys aren't there anymore for all of these hot indie acts?
You know, I wasn't that guy, but I was definitely, like, watching those conversations take place.
You were like, Chris Cadillac, why do you only do 3 shows?
I love Chris Cadillac. All right. We're going to talk about Chris Cadillac in a moment. One of my, like, favorite guys that just popped up randomly and then left. We can talk about Brandon Gatson. We can talk about Malachi Jackson. There's some fun.
The fact that AEW haven't booked Malachi yet does upset me a little.
Or even, like, just for, like, a getting beat up by the bad guys angle.
Mm.
That was actually one of the fun bits about the Bucks doing their heel turn is when they, like, destroyed their brother.
He deserved it.
But yeah, like, that was what I was doing, and that's where my formation of outside WWE pro wrestling came from. And then from there I started watching New Japan, and then boom boom boom, now I watch everything, and I'm way too involved in this stupid business.
So there was a direct line to you hosting a TNA podcast from you watching PWG. I want you to know that.
Yeah, unfortunate. I hate this company now. I'm taking it all back.
Yeah, you should have never watched it, and then you'd never be hosting a TNA podcast.
Damn it. If only I had have known. But yeah, that's where my PWG fandom came from. And then it just, I think it sort of waned a little bit. So, sort of around when the Brit rest boom started happening, and PWG shows started to become a little harder to get, and now, like, I don't even really watch them when they come out. I kind of skim through them.
You just watch the preview trailer and that's it. That's the real show.
Yeah, it's a little bit. But yeah, and then like leaving Reseda was a big part of it too. Like, that was the identity of the company for me, was that venue and that crowd.
Mm.
So when they... I like, the Globe looks great, and I think it's about as good of a replacement as you can get, but like, it's not Reseda. Reseda is like my favorite venue of all time. Like, it's Currican Hall and it's Reseda, California. The American Legion Post 308.
It is funny that the first show we're watching is also still not Reseda.
No, yeah, which is honestly, like, I used to skip these shows a lot. The Kurt Russell reunions were never my go-to shows when watching stuff, and I would always just skip to the next one because it wasn't Reseda. I did enjoy the other big building that they would run in, like, 08 or whatever, because it had the very famous bowler where Kenny Omega broke the top rope after being thrown into it. Mm. And then in a 3 versus 3 versus 3 tag match, they all turned on him for breaking the ring. And he ran through the entirety of the building and outside away from every other team member.
That was very rude of them to turn on poor Kenneth.
While Davey Richards and Necro Butcher are wrestling in the ring or some shit. Trying to, and it was, and like, there's, because it was this great big open building, and then there was like a platform above it with staircases on either side that you could still see on camera, and they would pan the camera back and you would see Kenny just running along the top of it while this swarm of 6 other guys follow him and 2 guys try to catch him at the other end, but he jukes around them and runs down the stairs and goes outside.
That is the moment he became the cleaner, actually.
Yes. That was Omega's debut weekend. That was also Chuck Taylor's debut weekend.
And he broke the ring. What an unprofessional, horrible person. He should have never been brought back.
Well, I think we're technically... Can we blame Davey who threw him into the ropes?
Nope, Davey is completely faultless. It's Kenny's fault. Davey didn't touch the ropes.
That's fair, that's fair. But, yeah, that's kind of my history with it. I don't know how we're going to, like, really talk about these shows, because there's no real stories to dig into. It's more just, like, talking about the people at this point in their careers and, like, the matchups. But this one, I find, is going to be a lot easier, I think, because there's some cool aspects of, hey, what did 2012 independent pro wrestling look like, and how different it is compared to now, and the influx of the still-running DGUSA at the time.
Yeah, it's fascinating to look at the depth of talent. And there's kind of a few reasons for why there is that kind of depth of talent, because this is still slightly pre-NXT. NXT is getting off the ground in the Triple H form at this stage, but not nearly as much as the hire every fucking indie wrestler on earth.
A good reference point for that is in the next show, like, equivalent of the year after, DDT4, is Generico's last show.
Mm. So we're just getting into the phase where Triple H signs every wrestler on earth.
Yeah, this will be the next 2 years where the stories of William Regal hanging out at PWG shows will start popping up.
Yeah, and we're also in the phase where this was Hogan, Bischoff, TNA, where they just did not even look at the indies. There was not even a thought to sign the best wrestlers off the indies. They were busy trying to sign, like, 6'3", 1999 superstars. So there was almost the period during which the indies were least recruited from, because at least in the early to mid-2000s, like, TNA were at least trying to pick up the likes of Joe and Styles and Daniels and people like that. And Shelley, whereas here it's like TNA aren't looking at it. WWE are only beginning to finally realize that independent wrestlers are good, actually, as I think Bryan Danielson was WWE champion during the period when the show took place, I think Excalibur mentioned. So they were like, hey, these guys actually might be pretty good, and we might be able to hang some of our company on these pretty good independent pro wrestlers instead of the same 6'2", 1999 superstars they're all looking for. So there it's like an almost unprecedented period of under-recruitment of the indies, and Ring of Honor weren't exactly in a place to sign people to full-time deals, at least at this stage.
And even when they would at that time, there was the whole thing about guys from this area being too expensive to fly. And that's the reason why Cornette, allegedly, the reason why he stopped wanting to bring in TJ Perkins and the Bucks.
Mm.
And that was also the time when, you know, they were trying to phase out Steen, trying to phase out Generico.
He's so stupid. What a stupid, dumb man.
So it's like, there's a, you know, even Ring of Honor is being picky about it, and you won't start seeing, like, those guys moving around a lot more until, like, and then New Japan starts getting this foreign following and starts picking up your guys like the Bucks and your Omegas and such, even though at this point, this is kind of like toward, like, Omega's kind of done around at this point.
Mm.
He's more an 09 guy.
It is, like, just an unprecedented level of talent on the independents. Just, it's insane how much talent is there top to bottom constantly. And even some of the contracted TNA guys occasionally work shows, like, the not PWG, but Porkin Indies. So you have a lot of people having exposure to great wrestlers, and that's how you get more great wrestlers. Like, the same thing happened in where you get the 2000s indie boom, where you have like 15 just phenomenal pro wrestlers in Ring of Honor. And you would ask yourself, well, how the hell does that happen without any of these guys getting signed? It's like, well, no one was signing them. So they were all there, they were all working each other, and they were all getting better. And the same thing happened here at the start of this decade, where they were all there. They had this huge influx of Dragon Gate talent, as you mentioned, from DGUSA. So they were all there, they were all wrestling great wrestlers, they were all wrestling Dragon Gate wrestlers too, and they all just got really good.
This was the part, the portion of history where PWG was kind of like Switzerland as well. It'd be the place that was still allowed to book Ring of Honor and DGUSA and Evolve guys all on the same and TNA guys with the Bucks all on the same shows.
Yeah, you would have that period afterwards where Ring of Honor got a little combative toward PWG.
Yeah, when Michael Elgin lost to Trevor Lee.
Which is funny because, like, Ring of Honor used to be where I used to buy PWG DVDs.
Yeah, that's part of it too, yeah.
The yearly Ring of Honor sale, where things used to be like dirt cheap, is where I used to buy a ton of wrestling DVDs. And then suddenly they're like, no, get out of here, PWG. We don't want you anymore.
Which would be a very funny full circle moment if PWG does end up going on the new Honor Club.
Mm. So I guess we'll start. This is Kurt Russell Reunion 3 we're talking about, with Excalibur and Colt Cabana on commentary. And why will we talk about some of the commentary? That is probably like this is... I'd imagine it's probably worse on the earlier PWG shows.
Oh, is it, Garrett Kidney.
Where there's a lot of stuff where you'd be like, oi! But there's still a good amount of stuff on these shows and you're like, oi!
Yeah, and it really is, like, the product of, like, that kind of time period humor, too. Mm. It's a lot of, like, I don't know the words that I want to use to describe it, but, like, you're always sunny type and your community and your, like, it's like that kind of white liberal guilt humor.
Mm.
Where it's like scumbag left, you know what I mean? Where we're going to say inappropriate things, but with the knowledge that the things that we're saying and being inappropriate is the joke.
Yeah, without getting to the phase of just, let's just not. Let's just not. And this is probably like right, like 2012 is right in the edge of let's just not.
And this is, and I had this conversation with some people about like the possibility of a PWG going on an Honor Club and how much they would have to scrub. And my solution was just do from like 2012 till now.
Mm.
Like, don't even bother going back to the older stuff. It's it's impossible.
Funny thing is, if you were a Bad Faith Wrestling fan, you could basically probably cancel every independent wrestler from the years 2002 to 2013 through PWG, but they'll never watch PWG, so you're fine.
I really want someone to cancel Chuck Taylor for calling Ricochet a gay lizard.
Yeah.
which is a top five all-time PWG commentary moment.
Mmm.
Which is just him going, you know what Ricochet looks like? And Excalibur's like, what? He just goes, a gay lizard. And everyone just cracks up.
Cancelled. Cancelled. You really could. You really could cancel them all. Go
I mean, they tried
down.
With Excalibur.
That's true.
Because, you know, he said the N-word.
And he probably has a lot more than that if he went through the entire history of PWG.
Oh boy, does he, Garrett Kidney.
Oh, bless him.
Yeah, and you know... That was just that was the general aesthetic of that those earlier year PWG shows, and it starts like I feel like 2012 is kind of the year that it begins to falter off.
Well, that is when you do have the broader cultural shift around it. It's just like knock it off, just yeah. Knock it off. Like there was the stage where it's like it was always inappropriate, but it wasn't unacceptable for the time. And yeah. As you get into 2012, 2013, 2014, it's like that's when it becomes really unacceptable for the time.
Yeah, 100%. But I suppose we should dig into this show. An interesting show, because I believe this is their Mania weekend thing?
Yeah, because it's tied to the Wrestle Reunion, which is where Kurt Russell Reunion comes from, which is very good wordplay. Well done.
Which, by the way, Peter G should be forever credited for, like, the witty title indie shit.
Yeah, it's considered a progress thing, isn't it? But it's like, no.
Yeah, they stole their shtick from PWG.
Yeah, as if there's anything original about progress.
Mm. Wow, that's a very deep quote.
So yeah, this is Kurt Russell Reunion 3, January 29th, 2012, tied to the Wrestle Reunion convention, which is the reason there's some wacky people on
this
show.
This is also, I was going to say, this is a way better Kurt Russell Reunion. This is probably the best Kurt Russell Reunion of the three, because the other ones were a little too not PWG. Like, they had, like, a Legends Battle Royal on one, and they had, like, RVD versus Chris Hero versus Roderick Strong for the PWG title on one of them.
Mm.
Like, and this one is kind of just, like, what if we did PWG, but with, like, Dragon Gate talent?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, there's not that much wacky people. Like, Masquerita Dorada is probably the extent of the wacky people, really.
And he's awesome in that match.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about him. And Harry Smith a little bit, I guess.
Harry Smith is kind of the most, like, wacky choice. Like, wacky we're at WrestleMania weekend choice to me.
Though he is a late fill-in for Eddie Edwards, isn't he? Did you mention that on commentary?
I think so, yeah.
So they were,
which, by the way, think, I meant, like, third from the top, from the bottom, we were just going to get the Bucks versus the Wolves.
Yeah, but yeah, they're even though it's tied to one of those big wrestling conventions, it's not the wackiest of shows. As you said, it's basically a PWG versus Dragon Gate show.
Yeah, and it's awesome, and it has, like, you know, some of those PWG staples on there as well.
The opening match, the Fightin' Taylor boys of Brian Cage Taylor and Ryan Taylor faced Famous B and Chris Cadillac.
I love the Fightin' Taylor boys. I thought they were always great, and especially when Chuck was with them, who was also the best co-commentator in PWG history. I just want to establish that. Like, Kevin Steen's a close number two, but Chuck Taylor's the number one.
Mm.
I liked Chris Cadillac in all of his appearances. Even, like, when I was, like, 13 watching these shows, I liked Chris Cadillac because he did flips and had cool pants.
That is half of what pro wrestling is, flips and cool pants.
And then Famous B, a name that I was always, like, whatever on these shows, but then when he showed up in Lucha Underground, I was hooting and hollering.
He was like, my guy! Even though I didn't love you, you're still my guy.
Yeah, because you're a PWG guy from the era when I was watching PWG, so of course you were. It was the same with Willie Mack whenever, like, because he kind of had the WWE thing fall through, and then he stopped doing PWG after that, and then eventually, like, whenever he would start popping up places, I'm like, hell yeah, Willie Mack, and now he may be a Ring of Honor AEW guy, so.
Brian Cage upsets me in this match.
It's because he's not seven times the size.
It's so, like, if you were to put this Brian Cage, who is still a big man, he's not small, yeah. But if you were to put this Brian Cage next to 2023 Brian Cage, I'm pretty sure 2023 Brian Cage would be twice as wide.
Which is hilarious because, like, you put him next to, like, 2018 Brian Cage and he's, like, three times the size. Like, Brian Cage of 2023 is slimmed down.
It's almost an optical illusion to me now to see this era of Brian Cage, where he still has his big Brian Cage head, but it looks almost photoshopped onto a smaller Brian Cage body. I'm like, oh, it's like one of those things that hurts your eyes. I'm like, it doesn't look right. It's uncanny valley for him to not be just the most humongous of men.
Garrett, this is how I knew him. This is how I was introduced to Brian Cage.
Like, yeah, same for me. Like, the first time I would have seen Cage was probably some indie stuff, and then he did the Gut Check stuff in TNA in 2013, where he still would have been roughly this size. But, I didn't realize how much I had internalized modern Brian Cage as my image of Brian Cage when I saw him here. It's like, he's just a normal-sized big guy.
And then, like, when we were talking about that, it reminded me of Brian Cage of a few years ago when he was even bigger than he is now. And I was like, God, what a monster he was.
Yeah, and he got hurt doing literally everything he ever did.
Exactly, yeah. And that's the thing about Brian Cage at this point. He's Brian Cage, but he can actually pull off all the moves really well.
Yeah, whereas if you watch it like TNA or, well, Impact era, Brian Cage in particular, that's, I think, when he was at his biggest and least able to move, but still insisted on trying to move, and he got hurt all the time.
But it's something, like, you can really appreciate from the guy. Like, his dedication to still doing his crazy shit.
He is truly Mr. Get My Shit In, even when he is far too large to be Mr. Get My Shit In.
It was really fun to hear the Brian Cage is a fucking machine call, even this early.
Mm. Because, yeah, when you watch the Impact run, where he's, like, he does get hurt far too often. And even, like, his world title reign was completely, like, cursed by the fact that he got injured in the match where he beat Johnny Impact. And then he was working Elgin, which didn't help, even though those matches fucking rocked, but then Elgin. But yeah, now to watch him in an era where he is normal big-sized as opposed to irrationally big-sized, where he can look big and cool and do power moves and also do flips without dying, ideal.
Yeah. And of course, like, I'm a big Ryan Taylor guy. I've always enjoyed Ryan Taylor.
What's Ryan Taylor up to?
I don't think he's doing anything now. He did the ROH stuff pre-pandemic, and then I think he got re-signed by NXT and then fired again.
That's unfortunate.
Because he was doing the Diamond Mine stuff.
Because I was looking at Chris Cadillac, which this is his third and final PWG match. It is the only time we'll be talking about Chris Cadillac, and then he just does a bunch of West Coast indies and kind of hasn't wrestled in recent years.
No. Yeah. It's a fun little opener.
Yeah, there was a cool flapjack onto the knees by the Taylors to add to... More people should be doing cool double teams in 2023.
Yeah, that was some of the stuff that I came out of this show looking. I was like, people just don't do cool double teams anymore. And even when I was watching some of, like, especially it was this match particularly, I was like, they're doing, like, a lot of crazy spots in the same style that you would see now, but they're doing different and innovative things as opposed to just doing the same three spots in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah, actually, the finish is a Canadian Destroyer. I shouldn't say there's no Canadian Destroyers. There is.
But it's a cool, like, double Canadian Destroyer, like, tag move. It's sick.
No, it was terrible.
No, it's sick.
Cage had Famous B across his legs.
Yeah, it rules.
And he was, like, propelling Ryan Taylor's Canadian Destroyer. It looked terrible.
It was awesome. It's sick.
On commentary, Colt said, Papa Taylor, he be fucking, to which Excalibur replies, Famous B wish he be fucking, but he's getting fucked.
My favorite one was it says Famous B on his the back of his trunks, but on the front it says Famous A.
Cage hit a terrible cactus clothesline on Famous B over the top. Bad clothesline. that did immediately set up your favorite PWG spot, which is the Doomsday suicide dive.
Yeah, in the first fucking match. It's awesome. Mm. And he hits both of them. Like, not only does he do the Doomsday, he keeps going and hits, like, the other guy behind him.
It is some prime PWG.
Yeah, good shit.
As mentioned, Ryan Taylor beats Famous B with the assisted launched Canadian Destroyer that didn't work. But I admire the creativity, but it didn't work. In one of many Dragon Gate matches on this show, BB Hulk faced Jimmy Susumu.
I thought this was actually really awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was like, there's a few matches in the show that I'm like a little slow to get going, but they got there in the end, and this is very much one that got there in the end because they kept dropping each other on their goddamn heads.
Yeah, like the start of this match, it felt like as if they were like working some Dragon Gate house show, but by the end of it, they were like into it, and it had stepped up a whole nother level.
Yeah, and they went over the crowd. They were talking about how Jimmy Susumu just got the name Jimmy, and it's meant to be an insult in Japan. It's meant to mean idiot. And then Colt was like, there's some good Jimmys in America, like Jimmy Carter and Jimmy Fallon.
I miss the Jimmys in Dragon Gate. Also, one of the best unit disband matches was the Jimmys disbanding match. Yeah, I thought this was great. I also love Susumu. He's great. Underrated guy.
Yeah, there was a lot of dropping each other in their head. Like, Hulk somehow dropped himself in his head doing a flatliner rather than taking a flatliner.
This is also the stage where BB Hulk is mobile enough to, like, make all of his kicks super snug.
Mm.
Like, he does his crane kick to the top of the head. And just, like, that was so... It's just so awesome. It's so, like... you rock the guy while you're doing it.
Yeah, BB Hulk is one of those, like, Japanese wrestlers that's over-indexed in my brain. Just because of how, like, prevalent he was in DGUSA.
Yeah, and the time period at which, like, you started watching, too. He was all over it.
Yeah, so it's like there's just tons of BB Hulk. And, like, he's probably, like, my sixth favorite Dragon Gate wrestler. But, like, he's there and he's always there. So it's just, like, he's right there front of my head when I think of Japanese pro wrestling. Even though he's not even a guy I particularly love. But he's just around all the time when I was first watching a lot of Japanese wrestling.
I also love Dark Side BB Hulk.
Mm.
That's my guy.
They kind of allude to here that he's no longer the dancing man.
No, this is Darkseid. This is Blood Warriors? Maybe Hulk?
If we're going to go full open the voice. Mike Spears is going to listen to the show and just be fucking furious with us.
I think this is Blood Warriors, Baby Hulk. Because I'm pretty sure it was Blood Warriors, Naruki Doi. So...
Mm. Rick Knox absolutely positively counted 3 on a pump handle driver that was meant to be a near fall.
Yes.
Like 100%. And then Susumu hit what was the mixture of like a J-Driller and the Awesome Kong Implant Buster, where he literally dropped Hulk right on his goddamn forehead.
It looks like he, like, in the way Hulk went down, it looked like he, like, folded up, like, it was, and, like, just rubber banded back, like, a, like in a video game. It was crazy.
I was so glad it was the finish, because if it's like, if you drop that man on his head and he kicked out, I would have been mad.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Absolute insane move that he no longer has a skull anymore, I don't think. I think he's dead. But yeah, there you go. Susumu wins. I said slowish to start. I went 3.5. I think I have a lot of 3.5-ish or adjacent matches on this show for a lot of the same reason, in that by the time they got there in the end, it rocked, but a little slow to start.
Yeah.
So the sons of the British Bulldogs, Davey Richards and Harry Smith, faced the Young Bucks.
I believe that is true.
Davey Richards is Dynamite's child. It's a 100% factual statement. It's funny to hear Excalibur here call the Young Bucks one of the most controversial teams in wrestling, which is meant to be based off like their heel PWG characters.
Which is that they work for TNA.
Well, not anymore. They've been gone for TNA for 6 months now. But yes. But also, like, now they are the most controversial team in wrestling for many different reasons.
Yeah, they've kind of always operated in that space.
Mm.
But, you know, this is the Young Bucks and PWG. This is it, you know? This is the best run of their career. This is the defining run of their career. This is what made the Young Bucks.
Mm.
This is going from undercard babyface tag team to becoming like the most despicable heel tag team in the modern era.
And again, who was the first company to turn them heel, Liam?
TNA by signing them, I think. Not even like as an act.
Yeah. So once again, TNA has influenced the world of professional wrestling.
My favorite backstage story to the Bucks doing this character at the time was that they wanted to go by their TNA names and refused to be called the Young Bucks and stuff, but Super Dragon was like, no, that's stupid.
No, that's a great fit. Super Dragon, come on.
He's like, no, you're the Young Bucks. But they would go on the mic and they would like demand to be called Jeremy and Max Buck.
Tremendous names.
They would wear their TNA gear at the same time too. It was a good shtick, and that's what kind of got them over. Well, to be fair, but the impetus of the heel turn originally was that like they were overpushed, and they beat Kenny Omega and Chuck Taylor in one of the DDT4 tournaments, and the PWG fans had started turning on them at that point because they really wanted Omega and Chuck Taylor to win. And then, of course, and to try and get them to be babyfaces at the end of that night, they wrestled Roderick Strong and Brian Danielson, who murdered them, who straight up killed them in that match. They're like, all right, what's the way to get the Young Bucks cheered? They're not getting cheered. Okay, let's hit them harder. We're going to keep hitting them even harder every time until the crowd cheers them. But the crowd was just into it and were like, yeah, fuck the Young Bucks. Hit them as hard as possible. So that Strong and Danielson would eventually just be like, oh, we got to do it. We got to turn them back. So let's beat them up even more.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It turns out they actually killed Matt and Nick Jackson that night, and it's quite a fortunate end to their very good career. They just had to keep hitting them harder until they killed them.
And I remember in the Bucks book, they were talking about how like they were pretty pissed off at them after that.
They were trying to get him over!
And they're like, yeah, but you fucking killed us.
But they were trying to get him over! It is funny to think about them as a controversial team, though, in their entire history. It's just, like, the controversy was they're really good.
The controversy was that they were these spot monkeys, Garrett.
Yeah, but fuck off.
Who couldn't work.
Ugh, wrestling's dumb and stupid. Whereas now they're controversial for like 7 different reasons. There's cultural reasons, there's brawl out reasons, there's those old same reasons. There's so many reasons people don't like the Young Bucks that are borderline irrational.
Most of them are, yeah. But this match is like relatively fun. They just have like kind of a match, and it's really cool when Davey's in there. and to get I think half to get the heel shtick over and half because Davey doesn't want to take a clean loss and they probably can't pin Harry Smith. They cheat to win.
Yeah, it's funny to see Excalibur like have the revelation like halfway through the match. It's like, wait a minute, son of Davey boy, spiritual successor to Dynamite. My God,
the new British Bulldogs.
They really are. They really should have been. Do you think there's unfulfilled potential with Harry Smith?
I don't know, because I think when he did go to like New Japan and have those big singles matches, he delivered, but it was in a very specific period of time.
Mm.
So I don't know if like long term he was ever going to like fulfill out to be like this tremendous pro wrestler. I think maybe if he incorporated more of his like real life eccentricity, like it could have worked, but I think when he's doing his wrestling, he's just a little too stoic. But when he was young and he was doing those New Japan tours, he obviously delivered whenever he was given those big spots. Obviously, the Nakamura match is the most famous.
Yeah, like you watch him here in front of it's not probably like a pure PWG crowd because it is tied to a convention, so there's probably a few more casual fans. But like they like him, they react well to him.
He was also coming off the Hart Dynasty stuff, right?
Yeah, he's probably not too long removed from WWE at this stage.
Which was, like, quite a popular, like, you know, schmark act.
Yeah, it was the one of the, you should push these people teams.
Yeah.
In that exact tone of voice.
And it was us saying it.
Wow.
In that tone of voice. Because we were 10. Well, you were 14.
I was, like, 20 when the show happened, so 19.
Oh, yeah, but I was rewinding it 3 years for the WWE run.
Yeah, right. Good. Excalibur says the words Daniel Bryan during this match.
Disgusting.
A little bit. There's a little bit of me is like, no, you don't. You
yeah,
call
but this
him
is
Daniel
at the
Bryan.
Stage when people didn't hate the company for signing the people we loved yet. So.
Well, yeah, we felt good about the idea of these guys getting signed at this stage, didn't we?
Yeah, you'll see it with the Generico stuff.
Especially when I think Danielson is world champion at this stage, so everyone's like, look,
they can treat them well.
It's not a relentlessly bad company. How long was the Young Bucks double superkick called early onset Alzheimer's?
That was a PWG thing from like very early on. And like it's like if you go back to it, most of their moves were named by Excalibur.
Yeah, there's a bunch of mood names on the show that I'll talk about them like, really? Alright.
Yeah, the splash moonsault risky business.
Yeah, there's a Willie Mack one where he does it's just a little clothesline in the corner and is like the name of it is My Dick Explodes?
Yes.
Okay. It's not even that good a move.
There's a bunch of them, yeah.
You should have a better name for a move called My Dick Explodes than a shitty little clothesline in the corner where he scores.
Well, normally
the ropes.
He flies real crazy with it. This was just kind of a mid one.
Before we get to that match, as mentioned, Bucks pinned Davey with more bang for your buck after a low blow.
Isn't it weird to see more bang for your buck be the finish?
It really is. They don't do it as a finish anymore.
No, now it's a falsie.
Also, I think it's better than the finish they do.
I don't think it's better than the Indie Taker. Sorry, I don't think it's better than the Meltzer Driver, but I think it is better than the Indie Taker.
I don't know. The Meltzer Driver never looks great for me.
I don't know. I've always enjoyed the Meltzer Driver. I think it's fun. But, like, I love that the Bucks have, like, 50 moves that they use now as, like, pseudo-finishes. Because, like, sometimes they will win with the more bang for your buck, not very often. But, like, if they feel like they need to establish it before a big tag match, you'll see them pick up a win with the more bang for your buck. They have the cease and desist. They have the sharpshooter crossface. They have, obviously, the Indie Taker, the Meltzer Driver. And then they do, like, they had the Kevin Steen shout-out for a while where they would do the package power driver superkick. They have the ultra finisher, the death by superkick, where they hit like 50 in a row, which they only bust out like it's their burning hammer, which I think I'm like the one person who has this knowledge that like they have this crazy ultra finish that they have only used like 4 times where it's just a million superkicks in a row.
Clearly they're not doing a good enough job telling that story, Liam. Excalibur's let us down.
Well, they did it in Ring of Honor was like the big one where they did it against the Briscoes at one of the, I think, Final Battle 2017 or some shit. And they hit like 40 in a row. And I was the only person shouting, death by superkick, I know the bit.
You're the one super fan.
Yeah.
Naruki Doi faced Willie Mack.
Which was like, what a fun surprise to see on this show.
Yeah, because like I had a humongous crush on Naruki Doi when he first showed up in TNA.
I have a humongous crush on Willie Mack, so this is fine.
I am like, Naruki Doi is the best looking man I've ever seen in my life. And I have watched a disproportionate number. Like, I didn't watch any Dragon Gate matches during this period, but I watched every Naruki Doi match I could get my hands on just to look at that man.
Well, he also had, like, you know, some of the best matches at the time, too. Mm. He had, like, Doi and Danielson in DDUSA.
And he was the Dragon Gate ace, basically, at this stage.
Yeah, he was...
Again, this is where my Spears is just shouting furious cases, trying to strangle us. It's like, no, he wasn't!
He was one of the six, it's fine.
Yeah.
That was me with Yamato, I think, where it's like, I didn't know what it was, but like for some reason I was like, I need to watch like Yamato specifically. Mm. Just something about his general aesthetic I always thought was so cool.
I was a doy boy.
But yeah, this is kind of like, it's an alright match. Willie Mack is a little inconsistent at this point, where sometimes he'll like bust. Also, it's not American Legion Post 308, so... Not his environment necessarily, but I thought this was like just kind of okay. It's cool that Willie Mack got to win.
Yeah, and it was a pretty good match. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, Willie Mack still looks the exact same.
He also does like the exact same moves. Like he does the big leg drop. He does the Samoan drop, nip up, moonsault. It's like, oh geez, you do your same bits. Well done.
To be fair, he hasn't been seen on like a major stage really since like the Impact run.
Mm.
So it's like. And that was, like, the only thing, really, in that entire, like, decade. So, I feel like he hasn't had to change things up. Maybe now that if he does start getting on, like, those Ring of Honor shows or something, he'll start to develop a little more.
Yeah, my man has a right to hit his same four spots in every match.
Yeah, well, you see the reaction it got on, like, Dark and Rampage, because people hadn't seen them, so...
Mm.
Why not at that point?
There was some jugglers in the crowd who did whoop whoops, and then the crowd chanted shut the fuck up at them. How do you feel about this?
I'm with the crowd.
How do you think Mike Tenay feels about this?
He was fighting the fans saying shut the fuck up in his Hatchet Man makeup.
Yeah, as a close personal friend of the jugglers, as we've discovered, Mike Tenay is defending their honor.
Yeah.
There was a cannonball with Willie in the corner that Willie just took an insane bump for. And then Willie wins with his sit-out powerbomb that he very nearly lost Doi on. He very nearly actually threw him over his own head before he dragged him back down and sit-out powerbombed him.
Yeah. I like that both Doi and Willie Mack do the crazy cannonballs.
Oh, yeah, the Doi Baisu.
And Mack does the, like, shooting star one.
Mm.
Which also Chris Cadillac did on this show, so...
Chris Cadillac didn't land on his feet, though. He's not as good as Willie Mack.
Yeah, Chris Cadillac's one is pretty crazy, though, because it actually is, like, he does, like, the shooter into it.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
Cool cannonballs. Good moves.
All right, well, how about you talk about the next match? I'm just going to head off for a bit.
So, Peter Avalon, Demas, Ray Roas, and Hollywood from Ring Kakeng face Cedric Alexander, B-Boy, Candice LeRae, and Mascarita Dorada, the highlight of which was far and away Mascarita Dorada.
The shit this dude did in this match. Insane. There's always been, like, you know, the discussion around minis, and, like, I feel like online, the big discussion has always been, like, oh, Mascarita Dorada, he's the good one. He's the really, really, really good one.
Yeah, like, he's the best wrestler in this match, and this match has Cedric Alexander in it.
Which is funny, because when Cedric Alexander eventually did show back up in PWG in 2015 against Everett and Lee, and that match got, like, this, like, massive explosion of popularity, and, like, it won, like, the PWG Boards Match of the Year and stuff. The story of it was like three debuts, but like Cedric had been here before in this.
Yeah, this one-off random eight-person tag team match.
Mm.
Yeah, everything Dorada does is insane. He's basically only in the ring with Demas. There's a moment where Demas is just like throwing him around.
He does like three rotations in the air.
The bumps Dorada takes are absolutely insane.
Mm.
He does like a beel across the ring, and then he does like seven spirals in the air and falls. It's the craziest thing you'll ever see in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does multiple rotation hurricane ranas around Demas. He also teased the dive and then did a superhero pose. So I'm like, oh, everyone stole that from him, huh?
Yep. My favorite one was he did like the senton style jump off from the top rope to the outside and then ran-ed him.
Mm.
That was insane.
Like his Rana's got a huge reaction. That one didn't get as big a reaction as I thought it should, frankly.
I don't think half the people saw what it was.
Yeah.
My favorite spot, despite all that, in this match is Cedric Alexander's corner dropkick.
Mm. Yeah, even here, I was thinking, like, oh, even in 2012, Cedric was great.
Yeah, he always had it. I really wish that was a guy who was making money in any other company.
Yeah, he's one of two people who every time he did something cool on the show, I was a little bit sad. No guesses who the other person in the main event was.
Ah, was it Super Dragon?
Yeah, very depressed that he did that big comeback match when PWG came back and hasn't been seen since.
He wasn't even a match, it was an angle.
Yeah, not even a match, it was an angle, yeah.
Yeah, no, the stable of Super Dragon, Flamita, and Black Tarus.
Mm, for one night only.
Which was definitely just the, like, let's get some hype, some news on this show for our first show back.
Yep. There was also that other guy in this match, which the crowd chanted, fuck you at him immediately, which I did at least somewhat appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Whose shtick in this particular period has become even more difficult to watch.
Yeah.
At least when he's doing like the 70s shtick and fucking WSX, it's like, all right, I have to look at him, which is unfortunate enough in the first place. But at least he's not doing things that invoke things he did in the future, and there's not fucking commentary about it that's, oh god, commentary in this match.
I'm just curious, will we have to review... Okay, we avoid the best match of that man's career in which he is in like 3% of it.
Mm.
Which happens in 2014.
How, like, we keep reviewing shows he's on because we're doing Lucha Underground too.
Because he's on everything. Because he's always available.
Because no one wants to hire him and he's just fucking everywhere and he won't leave us alone.
No, he won't.
I even googled to see how many matches he has on Lucha Underground, and it's an absolute fucking shit ton. And I'm like, no, he's probably the most guy who wrestles on that show. Because that's the problem. It's not just that he's on these shows. He probably has the most matches in WSX, and he probably has the most matches in GFW as well. So he's just constantly on these shows.
Yep. It is our it is our punishment.
And then we'll just get to him in TNA too.
Mm-hmm. No. Don't worry, the podcast will be dead by then.
No. Candace pinned that man with a moonsault.
Sure does.
Defeated Hollywood from Ring Kake. Blood Warriors, Shima, and Ricochet faced the Rockness Monsters combination of Johnny Goodtime and Johnny Yuma.
I like this, and I really like Rockness Monsters. I have a Johnny Yuma t-shirt around here somewhere. Mm-hmm. But I think this is really long.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I wrote in my notes, this match is quite dry, and that was like 15 minutes in, and then they finally immediately started doing stuff as if they responded to me writing, this match is quite dry, in my notes.
Yeah. It's real long. Just cut that like first 10 minutes and you're fine.
Yeah, because I think this was 22, I want to say. And as you said, if it was a tight 15, it would be a lot better, and if it was a tighter like 12, 13, it would be even better again.
Well, you're not going to tell Shima how long to go.
I am. Shima, go a tight 13, please.
No, he says, and then proceeds to have a 40-minute match.
Well, there's nothing I can do now.
Craziest thing in this whole match is Ricochet doing a moonsault that keeps going and goes into a back senton.
That would trick the AI.
Yeah, I wouldn't even be able to do the moonsault, so...
He is a freak of nature.
Especially at this point, when he was like... half the weight that he is now, and is a Gumby man even more so.
Yeah, he's in that 2005 AJ Styles period here, isn't he?
Yeah, 100%.
It's like, I will die. I will die when I do everything.
But, I forget what their tag name is. It's like the Mohawked Mohicans or some shit like that.
Shima and Ricochet?
Yeah.
But they were billed as Blood Warriors here, so.
Yeah, but like they had like an actual name sometime.
Hmm.
Again, Mike Spears and Case though, screaming at their podcast feeds.
So lucky they're not Patreon subscribers. We should lure them into, it's like, you want to correct us? Huh? Give us some money, huh, Mike? Huh?
Yeah, we're going to put this in the highest pay tier. I'm a big fan of Rock Test Monsters. I've always enjoyed them, but I've felt like they've never really broken out above this level.
Well, those were, again, the kind of guys who fell off in the super indie period of PWG, aren't they?
They stuck around a little longer than most.
Because
they were around when, like, Gargano and Taylor came back and started teaming. But that was, like, the end of their run.
Mm. So Colt sounded, like, literally upset when Ricochet did a 630 and they broke up the pin. He's like, come on.
There's a bit of that in the last three matches.
Yeah, there was a poison rana by Goodtime that he also spiked himself on his head, which I thought was an impressive achievement.
Awesome. There was some crazy poison ranas on this show.
There was a lot of poison ranas in this show.
Which par for the course when you have Park in the main event, I feel.
Yeah, he did three in a row, one of which was, I guess, countered, but countered in a way that was interesting.
But Super Dragon's bump on that? On his head.
Like, this was pre-everyone also doing Spanish Flies and Canadian Destroyers.
This is, people don't understand that the Poison Rana was the move.
Yeah, so this is like peak just Poison Rana, because, you know, when you get to 2015-ish, everyone's doing Destroyers and Spanish Flies too, so you have three moves everybody is spamming.
Yeah, people don't do the Poison Rana as much anymore. This is peak Poison Rana era. Before this was obviously like the Shining Wizard era.
Mm.
Then like after this you get the Cutter and the Super Kick. And then it's like, now we're just in the point of parody where it's just like the same three moves.
Yeah, PD hadn't retired yet, you see, so.
Yeah, people were respecting it.
Yeah. Rottnest Monsters hit a top rope DVD of their own partner onto Ricochet for the win.
Yep. That's classic Rottnest Monsters right there.
Because Shima sure as hell isn't taking that fall.
No. Not at this time. He would do it in Glee.
Masaki Mochizuki faced Roderick Strong.
I was so excited for this match, and then it did not reach my levels, because, like, this is two people I consider to be, like, the best of their era. Roderick Strong was in my, like, top 10 of all time.
Mm.
But they just kind of didn't reach the... Like, they kind of were, like, doing, like, a slow epic build, but then they didn't peak it right. And they didn't take the easy way out of just, like, kicking each other and chopping each other for 10 minutes.
Yeah, which they did little bits of it, and it was when the match was at its best, when they just hit each other. Take the easy way
which
out.
Is kind of, which is what you want from these two.
Yeah, if you picture a Roddy versus Mochi match in your head, you're like, they just hit each other, right? That's all they do. They just hit each other.
Yeah. It's a real shame that we're not going to cover, at least not in the immediate future, the era of Roderick Strong being, like, the best wrestler in the world in this company. But... We're going to get little tastes.
Not that he was bad, but that bizarre six-month period, not bizarre, but that six-month period where he's like, I'm going to go from a very good wrestler to the best wrestler.
Oh, 2014 to 2015, Roderick Strong can be put up there with anyone. Because not only was he like still as great as he's always been, he had like character and was like a perfect heel at the same time. Mm. And he had the perfect foil at the time too of Kyle O'Reilly.
It's interesting to hear Excalibur call Mochizuki the Elder Statesman of Dragon Gate even here.
Yeah, and now he even more so is.
Yeah, it's like in 2012 he's saying that when he was like 40, and now he's 50 and he still is.
Also, he may even be better than he was like at this point.
Yeah, run this back.
Oh god, Roddy, please leave.
Yeah, there is part of this that I think a lot of these matches would be better if they were in Reseda, where it's like the crowd are pretty good in the show, but they weren't like super invested and they would
but
have to be
Reseda
earned.
Would like added a star to every match.
Yeah, as opposed to this where it's like you really did have to work your way up to earning that crowd response. And I think most of the matches got it, but it took them a while, and maybe if the matches were shorter and faster, it might have been a little better, but...
Well, I think because you can tell that for a fact when the opener got over almost immediately because they were just doing shit.
Mochizuki kicked Roderick Strong in the head a bunch, and then he won.
Yes, this was like the only like DG win.
Poor Dragon Gate. We'll give one to Jimmy Susumu as well. Fair enough, he beat a Dragon Gate guy.
That doesn't count, no.
It is also a DG win over a GG guy.
Fair play to DG for actually playing ball here too.
I think they're this was toward the end of the GG USA run, wasn't it?
There was still a couple more years.
What did it go that long?
Yeah, like 2014. Because so, Ricochet was open the Freedom Gate champion in like 2013. Maybe it was just 2013, but there was still another year. Because WrestleMania weekend was their final show. That was Ricochet and Gargano, I think.
Oh, in 2013?
Freedom Gate. Yeah. So they still had another year.
Because I would have went to one of their WrestleMania weekend shows this year, 2012. As a real DG USA fan who has been to DG USA events.
Why didn't you go to the PWG show?
Was there one that WrestleMania weekend?
Well, if it was this year.
But I don't think there was.
If it was 20 whatever.
Because I didn't even go to the Ring of Honor shows. Because did they do shows that year? They would have, because that's when the Elgin and Davey match was, wasn't it?
And Evolve was running that time too a lot.
Yeah, but either way, I think I only did DG USA that year, because I did two Ring of Honor shows the year before,
because
they ran Center Stage in Atlanta, which was a cool venue.
Mm. What was on that show?
There was the World's Greatest Tag Team against the Kings of Wrestling.
I remember that match.
There was two Briscoes matches. They faced Future Shock, and then they had that match against the All Night Express where they bled a bunch.
Fun fact, that was when I had started watching Ring of Honor, because they were uploading shows to YouTube for free, so I could actually keep track. I could never watch the big shows, but I could watch all the TVs.
Yeah, that was the early stages of the world's greatest tag team in Ring of Honor, where people still had hope for them being great, and they were never great, which was... They were always very good. It's not like they were bad, but like people...
But you got one of the best Briscoe promos out of it, too.
Yeah, people expected like a top-tier run for those two coming out of WWE, and it never quite happened.
I don't think either of them cared enough, really. Like, they were professionals, and they went out there and they did their job, but like they weren't killing themselves either.
Yeah, and I don't think either guy is a top tippy top Ring of Honor style guy.
Nah. Well, you could see it because when Shelton finally started clicking outside of WWE, it was in Noah, and then he got signed like a year later.
And main event. Listen to the talent in this professional wrestling match.
What a fucking match.
El Generico, Pac, and Masato Yoshino.
Okay, just stopping there one sec. Right? El Generico, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Pac, one of the best wrestlers of all time. Mm-hmm. Masato Yoshino, one of the best wrestlers of all time.
Faced Super Dragon, Kevin Steen.
One of my favorite wrestlers of all time.
And Akira Tozawa.
Just, and of course, like, me being a little PWG fanboy was dying over seeing the Nightmare Violence Connection reunion here too.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing Steen and Tozawa teaming up again after they had their tag run in PWG.
Yeah, watching Tozawa here, where he's just the best, and it just
people
makes
forget.
Me sad.
People forget about like how good Akira Tozawa is because he doesn't get the opportunity to show it. But B, people forget that like Akira Tozawa was like a PWG guy.
Mm.
His run in PWG is so fucking good.
If you would like a modern comparison, Takeshita's 2022
yes.
run is to what 2012 and Akira Tozawa was.
I think it was even earlier than 2012. It was like...
Well, 2011.
Because this is him making his, like, return after... Because he was still in the white and black, like, Trunks gear when he was doing his run, and he was wrestling against, like, Hiro and Steen, and they did the Kings of Wrestling match in his last show. But, like, Tozawa on that... Like, when people were talking about Takeshita's excursion, talking about, like, all-time great excursions, then they were going like to Great Muta. The one that I kept bringing up as a comparison point was the Tozawa PWG one.
Mm.
He's fantastic. He like at first like he's like he gets kind of over, and then like he's not only, and then from his work, but also like his charisma starts getting over in that building too. And then they put him with Steen, and it's just it's magic. I love those two together.
It really does make you think about how it in 2023. There are wrestlers who are underused in wrestling, but are still pretty good. There's probably not a larger gap between talent and utilization for any wrestler in the world than there is for Akira Tozawa in 2023.
And also, like, historically, too. Because, like, he never won the big one in DG either.
Mm.
Which is, like, one of the saddest realities of it all, too.
Yeah, go back and win it. He's probably getting paid. All power to him.
Yeah, by all accounts, he is very happy in the where he is, and he's making good money. So,
yeah, of all the people to survive the 17 million rounds of cuts, Tozawa is somehow still there. So, all power to him. But it just doesn't make me sad to watch him in this match. He's so good at everything that is professional wrestling, and he's doing none of it anymore.
But Garrett, they gave him his old gear back.
Well, that's at least a nice thing.
He's not a ninja anymore.
He did wrestle Jonah on Raw, and I was like, should I watch that match? He's probably just
squashed.
No, you'd
be too sad.
I would be just too sad. Jonah probably kills him.
He does. And of course, like, you know, Super Dragon, Kevin Steen, El Generico, Pac, Yoshino.
I forgot how much I enjoy Kevin Steen as a small room wrestler.
Oh, he's the best. Like, this was my guy. Like, this was... Kevin Steen was the guy who made me tune into pro wrestling. On the first Ring of Honor show I ever legally bought, wink, it was him and Jimmy Jacobs.
Because, yeah, they get the heat on Generico in this match, and Steen is just jaw-jacking with the crowd the entire goddamn time. And he is so
looks
happy
like Gravity
himself.
Just remembered you, asshole. And then Generico's perfect response with the sarcastic knee slap. They're so great together too.
There's a little moment where Steen kicks Generico, and then he just lets out the most sensational cackle.
And the next year, leading up to DDT for 2013, of course, is like the wrap up of the Steen Generico indie rivalry too.
Which it did pop me that they brawl out to the floor and they do a big brawl on the floor section during this match, in which Steen gives Generico the apron powerbomb. It's like, you guys really are destined to do this forever, aren't you?
That 110%. Like, maybe my favorite indie rivalry of all time.
Do you think, we mentioned Takeshita, who mentioned recently that like he used to order in PWG DVDs. Do you think it is like a lot of these Dragon Gate guys doing these PWG shows that made like a wee teenage Takeshita at this stage be like, let me order these Pro Wrestling Guerrilla DVDs?
It could have been that, but I can tell you for a pure fact, because I've heard him say it, that El Generico was his inspiration.
Oh, I suppose, yeah, to him and El Generico probably in Japan, and then going back and being like, let me watch more of this El Generico guy, right?
Generico and Dragon Gate maybe too.
And that company called, that DDT company, I think Takeshi is familiar with that one.
Well, Takeshi's debut match was a singles match against El Generico and Budokan.
Mm.
Like, people don't, like, he does Generico shit. He does the Haluva kick in the fucking corner. He does the top rope brainbuster. Like, he is an El Generico mark through and through.
Blue Thunder Bomb too.
Yeah, like, he, like, if you, like, people don't, just don't know this because they weren't watching Takeshita at that point, but this guy is an unabashed El Generico fanboy. And of course, at the same time, wrestling Ibushi and Omega and stuff at the same time too, so.
That probably does make you a pretty good wrestler pretty fast.
Yeah. As I get up on my high mountain about having seen Takeshita like a decade ago.
I was the first person to watch Takeshita.
As I raise my glass and go, I was fighting with Shelton Benjamin about Takeshita online while you two.
So, Everest Germans, they rock. They're so good.
They're so good. I like that that's his spam move. Like, everyone else has their super kicks and they have their poison runners, and Tozawa's like, no, my spam move is going to be the German.
Yeah, the slow German as well. Not just the regular German, the Everest German.
With the best sell of all time, people just reaching out for the air, trying to grab anything to save them.
The package pile driver into Tozawa's knee, also a cool spot.
Yeah.
And then Pac pins Tozawa with the black arrow after a Haluva kick and a...
British Airways?
Oh, I'm so sorry. A Red Arrow, a WWE name. Red Arrow? Was that what it was called?
Yeah, it was Red Arrow.
Okay. And Yoshino hit his spinny armbar thing, which I'm sure has a name.
I'm sure it does too.
As the babyface team wins in again, it was probably on the long side. It was like a 30-minute match, but a very enjoyable 30-minute match.
And one that actually deserved the 30 minutes, I feel.
Yeah, and they filled it out because you did have the middle heat segment, which on the surface would probably drag, but you have, again, Kevin Steen as one of the best small room wrestlers of all time.
And also, El Generico may be the greatest babyface in American wrestling.
Yeah, you have the babyface in peril that is Generico, and then Steen will not give a single second silence. He will not let a down period exist without a quip or him being funny and mocking the crowd.
He's the best. He's the greatest.
Yeah, like, not the best PWG show in the world. I didn't have a match that broke 4 stars for me personally. A lot of 3.5s, 3.25s, 3.75s for the main event as well. Probably partially environment, partially matches too long. But still, when you look at the talent on the show and the interesting matches, it's a good show.
Yeah, I you know, it isn't American Legion Post 308, but it is a good, like, I think it was a good taster before we head into the next level, you know?
Yeah, we don't get the good stuff until the next episode.
Which is, of course, Mystery Vortex?
Mystery Vortex is at the end of the year. You think every show is Mystery Vortex.
Every show should be Mystery Vortex, to be fair. Well, it's also because Mystery Vortex has maybe my favorite PWG show of all time, like PWG match of all time on it, so...
You just assume every show is Mystery Vortex until you see that match.
No, why? It isn't fair to admit. That's at the end of the year. Why does Cage Match go in reverse order? It's world's finest. But,
sorry, I'm too amused at your idea that Cage Match goes in the order of newest to oldest, and you're so baffled by this.
It should start at the start of the year. Mm-hmm. 1 should be the first show, 9 should be the last show. But I always thought that Failure to Communicate should be the Mystery Vortex show, because you're not communicating the card.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for your support.
Follow us on Twitter @TNA History Pod. Follow me on Twitter @GarrettKidney. Follow Liam on Twitter @TheGleepMuta. Subscribe to us on YouTube at You've Got to Be Kidding Me. Follow us on TikTok. We had a TikTok do wild numbers the last day or
and
so.
And we've got nothing in response.
Absolutely nothing, but you can follow us on TikTok at TNA History. Thanks for listening, and bye-bye.
I don't have a thing for this yet. Just remember, every day is Earth Day. It's a PWG reference, you won't get that.
PWG, I get it.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.